and transcripts on our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Silverton People for Peace, presenting the 22nd annual Silverton MLK Observance, Monday, January 20th, featuring poetry readings, a community potluck, and keynote speaker Trevina Cassis. More information at kboo.fm/community events.
Welcome to Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali Ali, your weekly antidote to the doom and gloom of mainstream news, lifting up solutions that bring us closer to economic, racial, gender, and environmental justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media. This week, as Los Angeles burns from climate change-fueled winds, in climate change-fueled dry conditions, as thousands of homes are destroyed and the air is filled with toxic smoke, I'll tell you just how close I came to the fires and how my community of North Pasadena and Altadena is picking up the pieces. I'll bring you the stories of those impacted, including Daisy Trejo, a young Mexican-American resident of North Pasadena who lost her family home, where she lived with her husband Salvador and multiple family members, and from where she ran her business. We'll also hear from Altadena-based resident and musician Paul Livingstone, who for years has brought joy to local audiences with his classical Indian sitar playing. He lost his home, his recording studio, and he shares the story of how he ended up saving his neighbor's home. Then we'll hear from those who are engaged in mutual aid efforts, residents of Altadena and Pasadena who've stepped up to help their neighbors, four young women from the area who set up an impromptu donation site for families who lost their homes, one of dozens of spontaneous community hubs that have risen around the edges of the fire-stricken neighborhoods in view of National Guard and police who are barricading the path to Altadena. We'll also hear from two young men who were part of a volunteer cleanup process organized by the Pasadena Job Center, an immigrant worker-run day laborer center. And Desiree Sayarath, owner of Dim Books and Boba, and Nikki High, owner of Octavia's Bookshelf, will share how their independent bookstores have been turned into mutual aid hubs. Finally, we'll hear from Perry Bennett, whose sandwich shop Perry's Joint is at the heart of Altadena and North Pasadena's Black community. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It is a miracle that I'm broadcasting this week's show. My home, where the studio is located, is based in North Pasadena, just two blocks from the border with Altadena in Southern California, and just three blocks from where the ferocious fires destroyed homes and survived. The fires that have been cutting across Southern California, the closest one to me being the Eaton Fire that has so far claimed 16 lives and counting and destroyed thousands of structures. Along with thousands of residents of the Southern California region, I evacuated with my family last Tuesday, January 7th, just hours after I recorded last week's show. My elderly parents, my two children, my husband and cat, we fled the hurricane force winds on Tuesday night to spend the night at a local hotel. And the next day, we didn't know if our home of 26 years had been destroyed or not. It's been a harrowing week, and I never thought I would be reporting from the front lines of such a major disaster, considered one of the deadliest wildfires in California history. I personally know more than two dozen families who've lost their homes in the fires. My children's former school has burned down, restaurants I ate at, coffee shops I worked at, gone. There are National Guard soldiers deployed two blocks from my home, barring entry into Altadena. Community donation sites have popped up to help the thousands of people who have suddenly become homeless. We are a community traumatized and wondering how we will pick up the pieces. I've spent the past few days walking and driving in my neighborhood, speaking with people who've lost their homes and with others who have set up mutual aid centers. And today, from the epicenter of the Eaton Fire, I'll bring you these stories. First, we'll hear from Daisy Trejo, a Mexican-American resident of North Pasadena who lost her multi-generational family home. Then from Paul Livingstone, a lifelong resident of Altadena, a musician and community activist who also lost his home but helped save his neighbor's home.
Daisy Trejo, and I used to live here a few days ago until all of this happened.
How long had you lived here?
For about 24 years, and I remember coming with my dad, taking you know, like ready to move in, and I knew it was home since the first time we stepped in here. We knew this was gonna be our forever home. And
you live here with your lived here with your husband and
yes, my husband, my parents, my younger brother, my sister-in-law, and my nephew and our pet Zoe.
So a multi-generational family.
Yes, it was our home.
Describe what your home used to look like.
I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I mean, for us, it was everything, you know. Like, we grew up here. My brother, you know, he was 1 year old when we moved in here. So we celebrated his first birthday here, and all those memories, you know, like, we just have those memories left, you know.
When did you evacuate?
Well, we left, and me and my husband actually came back to water down the roofs, because, you know, we had
home. You came back to water down the roofs?
Yes, because my front neighbor called me, and she's like, well, I'm here watering mines. And I was like, well, I'm going to, because, you know, I'm not gonna let nothing happen to the house. I'm gonna try and give it my all. So me and my husband came, and
where had you evacuated to?
To my uncle Mario's house and my aunt Jackie's.
You came, was it already in flames?
No, it wasn't. It was across the street. And
so there were flames across the street?
Yes, but not too close at the moment. Yes, I know. If those palm trees would not have been there.
Which palm trees?
The ones they're cutting right now.
So though there were palm, yeah, so the palm trees got on fire.
Yeah, so I guess like it blew the
embers. Some,
yes, and it was done from there.
Okay, so the palm trees caught on fire.
Yes,
and then you, but were you here when it happened?
Yes, I had the water hose. You could see the water hose where I left it. My dad had to turn off the water, and with my husband and my dad, they had to pull me away and take me inside the car, because I just had hope that I was, you know, gonna save my home. But it was too much. The fire was already like blowing at us, and like the flames, and the first 2 days I couldn't eat. I probably took like 2 bites here and there. But yesterday and today I'm doing a little better, you know. But it's like I just want to come to my bed and, you know, come to my home, and I can't. But I'm thankful that we're staying with my other uncle and his girlfriend. So
what do you do for a living?
Well, actually, my whole business was here. I used to do cakes, but I kind of stopped, but I still had my equipment. I do backdrops, like for parties, you know, the little white carts to put the cake, balloons, all of my stuff that my husband bought me to start my business, gone. But I mean, it sucks. I know it could be replaced, I know, but it sucks, because he worked so hard, my dad worked so hard, my mom, she worked here babysitting, you know, like, it sucks.
Do you think if there had been a bunch of fire trucks here when your house caught on fire, that they would have been able to save your house instead of just you with a hose?
Oh yes, they just kept passing us by. I don't know why, but they said they were out of water, but I honestly don't know. A lot of them just kept passing by, and I kept flagging them down, like, come over here or go across the street so it won't come to our side. And I don't know where they were going. Probably to get refills, or they were going to another place, but at least one could have stayed. We want to rebuild, because my dad did work hard for it. He sold his favorite truck, his 19, I don't know what year was it, but it was a 90s Chevy. He had to sell that to put the down payment for the house.
May I ask your family's cultural background?
We're Mexican. My mom is from Jalisco, and my dad is from Zacatecas.
Has Altadena been a community that you felt was home for you?
Oh yes, Pasadena, Altadena, like, I'm like right in the border of those two cities. And yes, I mean, it's I mean, that this is why we want to rebuild, because this is our home. This is like this, we love this city, our city, like, yeah, yes.
Do you think that you're going to get the help you need from insurance companies, from the government, from FEMA?
We're being hopeful, but I did do a GoFundMe. So all that money will go to my dad and my mom, and we'll just figure it out from there. He is getting a lot of emotional support from friends, his cousins, his brothers, his sisters, and actually one of his sisters has burned down too by the Christmas tree lane. Mm. Like, we're thankful, but we just want to come home and, you know, like, watch TV, be in our beds, you know, like, be comfortable. And, you know, but we gotta work with it, you know. We're thankful. And
my name is Paul Livingstone. I'm a professional musician, composer, and community activist. And I've lived here in Altadena my whole life. Climbed these mountains, you know, went to high school here, played in bands. And I run a nonprofit called the Soul Force Project, and we work with people of all ages to spread a message of nonviolence through music.
So we are standing right now in front of the wreckage of someone else's home that is really close to yours, because we tried going in. And tell me what happened. There's a barricade. Tell me what happened when we tried going in.
Yeah, the local police and the National Guard are here, and they're stopping us from going into the most highly affected area. It's really incredible. It looks like bombs fell on Altadena, and my street was really devastated. Probably about a third of the houses are left on Ventura Street, where we live. So we can't get in today, unfortunately, even though I've been there twice already this week since the fires. But I had to kind of stealthily get in, and got to see some of the incredible devastation. The schools that have burned, the businesses, just hundreds and hundreds of homes that are just gone, just burnt to a crisp. Cars that look like they're just been to hell and back, you know. I've never seen anything like it.
So Tuesday night, the storm began. Did you evacuate Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think the wind started Monday, right? Yeah. So and then the fires came Tuesday evening, and we evacuated me and my wife and all my neighbors kind of at the same time, because we could see the flames and we weren't sure how close they were. So I immediately went and got my folks who are just a mile away. We got them out, and I got a few of my musical instruments, which I could grab in like 2-3 minutes. But most everything, my whole music studio, our home, our garden, all our fruit trees, it's all in ashes.
So you came back Wednesday. And what did
you see? I actually came back Tuesday morning to try to get get anything else.
Wait,
I could.
No, hang on. You left Tuesday. Wind started Monday. Fire
right.
started
Wednesday
Tuesday
morning, 6:30 a.m.
It's all blurring for me as well. It's all blending in.
Yeah, so early Wednesday morning I came back, and I was going to go down. We have kind of an extended driveway with several neighbors, and the house in front was completely on flames, so I was like, man, if I go down that driveway, I may never come back.
So when you walked or tried to go on Wednesday morning, the flames were actively burning.
Yes, yes. And the house across the street on the corner was burning down. The one right in front of us was burning. And I was like really tempted to try to go in and get some stuff. But I know that would have not been the wise choice. Because, you know, it'd just be a crapshoot whether I come out alive.
So then you returned to your house, what, on Thursday to see the...
I actually came back that day towards the afternoon. And I was able to go up side streets and kind of get past the cops. And, you know, I told them, hey, this is my home. And when I was nearby... So they wouldn't actually let me down my driveway, so I had to go around and hop over a neighbor's wall. Their house was already burned down. There's just some minor flames going on. And I got to my house, which was completely leveled and in ashes with small fires burning here and there. And just, you know, I was walking around in the ashes. I could feel the heat coming off the ground still. And there was, you know, broken hoses leaking, which was strange because they were supposed to have turned off the water. So then I went back out the driveway, and I went over to my friend Evan's house, who's actually my student and good friend. I went over to their house, which was okay, but as I got closer, I saw that their garage was on fire. So I ran in there and I tried to turn on the hose, and there was nothing. And I was like, what is going on here? So I was taking rocks and throwing them inside his garage on the burning embers, trying to put out what I could. And then I was like, this is ridiculous. So I went out and I found a fireman like a block away. And I was like, guys, you can't see it from the street, but my friend's house right over here is the garage is burning, and it's going to jump to the house if it keeps burning. And they were like, man, we'd love to help you, but we have no water. I said, come down here so you can see. It's that wall right there. That the garage in front of that wall is burning from the back. And the house right next to you on the corner of Lincoln and Ventura is completely leveled already. And there's little flames all over there. So I was like, please call someone and send them down there because my friend's not there. And I couldn't turn on the water and do anything myself. And I went back because they're like, we can't do anything. I was like, please call someone. So I went back there and I found like a 5-gallon, you know, like a drinking water with a spout. And I'm trying to, like, because the neighbor's wall was burning, pulled off the spout and I'm pouring water on the neighbor's burning wall so it doesn't catch their house. And about 5 minutes later, Riverside Fire Department shows up, because apparently they did call someone and they pulled up right in front of the house. And I was like, hey guys, come over here. This is where it is. And I show them, my friend's building a recording studio there. So luckily his gear hadn't gone in there yet. It was just the shell of the studio. It was almost finished. He was about to put, you know, thousands of dollars of gear in there. Like my studio, I lost probably, who knows, $30,000 worth of gear. So I'm like, bring the firefighters over there. And they get in there and they're like, we only have 500 gallons of water. I have no idea how many gallons of water it takes to but I show them there, and they go in there and they start hosing it. They start pulling his roof apart to get the wood off the roof down on the ground and to get into where the flames are burning. And thank God they put it out. And
so you helped save your friend's house?
Yes. And I saw them yesterday because I was able to get up here, and he was there with his folks, and they were just practically in tears. They were so grateful.
I'm looking behind us at the scene of absolute destruction, and I'm thinking the last time I saw something similar to this was in photos of Gaza. And I know you've been outspoken on Palestinian rights.
Yeah.
Americans in Southern California who've been affected by this are getting a fraction of what Gazans have been going through, thanks to our tax dollars, right? Which could be going to helping us rebuild and instead going to kill Palestinians.
Yeah, it's really a travesty. And I hope that people can just wake up and see that, you know, we got enough problems here to deal with than sending weapons to, you know,
anyone.
A Nazi-like government in the Middle East to murder people en masse, you know, who don't even care about children, innocent children being slaughtered. And that's not to say that, like, I mean, people always say women and children, but it's like men too. These are fathers. These are grandfathers. These
brothers
are people who have
sons,
lived there for so many generations, you know, centuries. So we're going to continue to pray for that situation and just keep it centered. And I hope that people can see the little bit of the the similarities.
That's Paul Livingstone, a musician, sitar player, community activist based in Altadena, California, who lost his home to the Eaton Fire and helped his neighbor save his home. Before that, we heard from Daisy Trejo, a resident of North Pasadena, who lost her multi-generational home to the same fire. Paul and Daisy are members of my own community. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, survivor of the Eaton Fire and senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify. This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Thousands of people are reeling from one of the deadliest wildfires in California history, and I count myself among them. My home and the studio where I record this program are located in North Pasadena, just 2 blocks from the border with Altadena in Los Angeles County, where the Eaton Fire broke out on the night of Tuesday, January 7th. Homes to the north, to the west, and to the east of my neighborhood have burned down. That I was able to return to this home after being evacuated and find it still standing is a miracle. Also miraculous are the members of this community and others from outside the community that are helping people pick up the pieces. In this segment, I'll bring you the voices of people engaged in inspiring acts of mutual aid, including 4 young women who set up a donation exchange site on the front lawn of a home, and 2 young men who drove to Pasadena from Santa Monica to volunteer to clean debris and fallen branches from streets and people's homes. And we'll hear from independent bookstore owners Desiree Sayarath of Dim Books and Boba and Nikki High of Octavia Bookshelf, who've turned their stores into mutual aid centers in the wake of the disaster. As well, we'll hear from Perry Bennett, the proprietor of Perry's Joint, a local beloved Black-owned institution.
I'm Samantha James. I'm from Altadena and I live in Santa Monica currently.
I'm Makai Ward. I'm from Altadena. I lived off of Mount Curve. Yeah.
I'm Savannah Bradley and I'm from Pasadena. I live off of Woodbury.
I'm Allison Moore. I lived off of Altadena and I'm currently in Pasadena at my mom's house.
Anyone you know personally who've lost their homes?
Yeah.
So as of right now, there's only 2 houses standing on Mount Curve. So me and my mom were taking care of my grandma's house. So the house is still standing. We don't know about any damages yet. And then the house beside us is also there, but then everything else is completely gone.
We lost our dad's house in the fire.
We lost my grandpa's house, and then my cousin, this is his house, his childhood home, we lost that too. And the fire tore through my dad's backyard. And we lost our stables and his tool shed and all of the structures that were back there.
So you're all from this area. This is home for you.
Yes. Yeah.
What are you doing here today? Behind you, it looks like you're having a garage sale, but of course on any other sunny day, that's what it would be. What are you doing?
We're crowdsourcing and gathering supplies. So we have everything from N95s and gloves to hygiene items to food to baby clothes, breast pumps, We've just been getting donations from the community, getting money donations from the community on our GoFundMe, and setting up here and also at Allison's house on Harding.
And currently it's blocked off, so don't try to go over there. There's a blockade.
Have people been coming and taking stuff? Can you tell me a sense of, give me a sense of who's been able to take advantage of this work that you're doing?
Well, fortunately, people will drive by and see what we're doing, and the word will spread through social media, through family and friends. One unique thing about what we're doing is we are offering delivery services, and we're connecting with people that we know in the community or who knows the family. So we're able to receive information about a family in need, even if they have relocated outside of the community. And we are making a sheet listing the ages, what they need, their sizes, and we're able to set aside deliveries for them, or they can pick it up, just so that, you know, it's hard when you're already going through so much to have to come and dig through piles of clothes, finding what you need. So we try and make it as easy as possible for them by setting things aside and delivering to the families.
Before I started the interview, I was overhearing someone coordinating for a home for people. Someone has a room they're renting. Are you helping connect people who have been suddenly finding themselves unhoused with housing?
Yes. So currently I work for a nonprofit called Changist. We're based out of Echo Park. So shout out to my CEO, Mario. He actually has been coordinating personally with me and other organizations that we usually partner with to like try to rehouse people temporarily or as long as we possibly can throughout the community. So if we know people who need to be replaced or rehoused, please don't hesitate to reach out.
What do you think is going to be happening for the future of Altadena? Because I'm hearing some reports that developers are going around asking people who've lost their homes. You've heard that too?
Yeah, they asked my dad and my cousin. They asked them if they were interested in selling their property.
Someone just drove by and...
Yeah. Yeah. They've gotten calls as well over the phone to ask if they're selling. It's so predatory and it's so disrespectful, honestly. Like, you didn't even wait. They got those calls like the next day. So it's just really disrespectful. And honestly, the future of Altadena, like, we are a strong community, Altadena and Pasadena. Like, we are so tight knit. That's why we're here. That's why we have so many people who've been coming by just by word of mouth. They're comfortable stopping here and talking to us and getting supplies from us. We're planning to keep doing this. That's partially why we started it, because we know that the resources start in the beginning and then they fade. We're not planning to fade. So we really want to make sure that we are sustainable and that we are helping our community members where they need it and how they need it.
I was coming back from class and I was driving up and I saw the mountain on fire, and like, we didn't even have any like alerts to alert. My mom wanted to stay the night. And then I drove down and I seen the whole entire mountain on fire. We didn't even get text alerts. And like the older people in the community, it's a lot of older people, a lot of family. So, you know, people who don't always like have a phone or have like an older phone, like how was anyone supposed to know? And like, even from where my house was, where now the whole community is gone, like there was nothing out there. We saw a lot about Palisades, which is also devastating, but they didn't let us know. Like, if it wasn't for seeing each other, like my neighbors were, we were knocking on each other's doors, offering each other's rides, like saying like pack a bag, like you have to go. Like, if it wasn't for each other, we would have never survived it, if I'm being 100% honest. Like, if we weren't such a tight-knit community.
Yeah, I found out from my neighbor.
Yeah, it was like word of mouth, knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. I literally saw one of my older neighbors, like old school, like friends of my grandparents, pull out their car and leave. I was like, why would they just leave in the middle of the night? Like, what's going on? Like, they would never just leave. All my neighbors like driving their cars out. So I was like, okay, like, we gotta go. Like, I gotta go. So yeah.
My dad lives off of Canyon Crest, and so he's right at the base of the mountains. We're used to having to evacuate and that risk that we are gonna lose our home. But some of the homes that were lost, they never thought that the fire would go that far. And I have like severe breathing problems. I know my entire family has asthma. So there are certain things that we risk living here, and we do it anyway, but that doesn't make it okay. And there needs to be policy changes. I used to work in the legislature. They need to figure it out. And specifically for fire insurance, the fact that people are losing their homes and they're not going to be able to rebuild because their fire insurance was canceled in the last year, like, that's ridiculous. Like, we should not be in this position at all, especially since there's so many Black and Brown communities over here with multi-generational homes who have been passing down their homes for generation after generation, including in my own family, including in some of their families. Like, this is just not okay, and they definitely need to make policy changes.
What sort of policy changes would you like to see?
For one, they need to revamp the coverage of fire insurance. These private companies should not be allowed to just deny coverage after people have been paying for decades fire insurance. Like, that's just not okay. The state needs to supplement the fire insurance that's being provided if a private provider does cancel. And ultimately, they just need to get out the private interests that are in Sacramento that are lobbying hard to make sure that they can cancel people's coverage.
Creating a society that's more built on, you know, community and walkability and spaces where we are fire resistant, but also everything is accessible to people. I think having a close-knit community where people can walk and communicate with each other, and where the property is very well taken care of in every point, kind of helps with that fire resistance and being able to walk down your neighbors and see what's going on and see what's happening. But people are so disconnected and so car-based that it makes it harder when you're in more extreme situations and people can't get to each other. And there's blockades. I mean, there was, this wasn't in Altadena, but you know, you heard about cars all stopped and, you know, people having to plow through them and crashes and all of these terrible things. We need to just make our society more livable for people and less car-based. I think that's not directly related to the fire, but it is related to survival. And so I think that's just as important.
Yeah. There's a lot of National Guard around, curfews, cops.
The National Guard, if you have ID stating that you live there, like both of our dads would not be allowed in. And, you know, you do also have to think about how race contributes to that. Both of our dads are dark-skinned Black men, weren't allowed to go to their houses, had to park in La Cañada and walk in multiple miles through JPL and through the dam that she was just mentioning.
And the Washington Post was reporting Palisades area, the National Guard was escorting homeowners to their homes. But here, it doesn't, I haven't heard any reports saying they were allowed.
They haven't offered it at all.
Yeah, like, they've denied it straight up.
Even with ID, even that says I'm in that house right there, you can walk me to my home and see that I have the key and an ID that's this address. They will still not let you in your home, regardless of what your reasoning is or
medication. People have been denied, like looking for pets, medication.
Mm-hmm. How is that helping?
insurance stuff.
Thank you. Good luck to all of you and your families.
Thank you. I'm Raphael. We're just, you know, here with a group of friends trying to help clean the neighborhood up.
My name is Charlie.
I saw you guys are mostly young folks. There's a group of you walking around wearing masks, carrying rakes and shovels. What's your plan for today?
Just to help clean debris. Just do what we can to kind of just clean the streets up, because I know, you know, people have so much to worry about right now that's probably not on their minds, is to help kind of clean all of the mess that from what happened. So we're just here to help do what we can.
Now, you don't live in this neighborhood, you live in, you know, different parts of Southern California. Why is it important for you to be here today?
Just to help the community out. I think, just, you know, even though I wasn't directly affected by the fires, you know, I do know a lot of people who were, and just living in LA, or, you know, the greater LA area for pretty much most of my life, I do consider myself part of the community, and, you know, I love this place, and I can only imagine how painful and heartbreaking it is for the people who, you know, have lost so much. So I just think it's important for us to help out in a time like this and just gather around and be there for each other.
Yeah, right. I mean, just seeing all the videos, like being so close, like the proximity of everything. Seeing, like, my friends' places burned down. Just,
you know, people whose houses burned down?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And, it's just so much devastation, and I just want to make sure, try to get back as much as I possibly can.
I think for the most part, the game plan is to kind of just, clean up the streets, go house to house, and, you know, see who needs the help, I suppose. The main organizers for this is Pasadena Job Center. So they're putting together groups of people to do this stuff. And we had some friends who did the same thing yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Pasadena Job Center is basically like where undocumented immigrants have been for years been available
in a protected environment to be available to work. It's it's basically like a day laborer center. Well, thank you both so much, and good luck to you, and thanks for your service today.
Thank you.
You have a wonderful day. Be safe out there.
Yeah.
I'm Desiree Sayarath. I'm the owner of Dim Books and Boba in Hennessy Square.
All right, you just literally opened your doors weeks ago, maybe?
Less than 4 weeks ago, I think, December 14th.
And you are on the edge of where the fires almost came from Altadena. You're literally at the edge of Pasadena and Altadena. What were those, we were talking on Friday, what was it like for you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
Tuesday we were already closed, so I wasn't here to begin with. Wednesday we evacuated, and it was just a really stressful time, full of anxiety, not knowing if our shop or home would be affected by the fire. And for our shop, I felt a little, not silly, but just kind of like, it doesn't compare to people losing their homes, but we're a brand new business. I just quit my job, and I invested, of course, like a lot of time into this, so.
And it was all your savings,
worry.
I imagine?
Yes, all of our savings. So it was double the worry, but fortunately, both the shop and the home came out safe, just right at the fire boundary. My family and I evacuated to Hesperia during the time. Okay. We had family out there, and it was the safest spot for all of us to go to.
What's happening behind us?
So my son's soccer teams organized a donation drive of food, clothes, toiletries, non-perishables. They really organized it. I just offered the space and been promoting it on social media, and we've gotten an amazing amount of donations and a lot of people who have come, and we were able to take care of them. But at this point, we need to be here for our community and try to do what we can and look out for each other, because no one else is going to do it besides our neighbors.
There's been like reports of looters. I'm not seeing anything. Do you think that's overblown or?
Maybe slightly. I've seen some stories of looters, but thankfully over here we haven't been impacted and my home was safe, but I wouldn't cancel it out. I'm sure it is happening, but maybe not at such a large scale.
Right. So people have been coming. What sort of stories have you been hearing? Are people talking about losing people who've lost their homes coming in and getting supplies?
I've been in the store most of the day, but from the people who have come into the store, they have lost their homes. And what my store has been able to do is offer free drinks to those affected by the fire, which is generously funded by our neighbors and online netizens who want to contribute in whatever way they can. And this was a platform that we were able to offer.
So people online were donating money so you could give free drinks to the community?
Yes, as a digital gift card that is just applied towards drinks, and many people have generously donated of varying amounts, and anything truly helps, and people just want to be able to feel like they're helping, which is completely valid.
What do you hope for the future of this community?
I hope that the community stays within the hands of the community.
What do you mean by that?
I hope developers kind of have a little empathy and not try to swoop in. I understand everything kind of seems like a cash grab nowadays, but we need to think of our neighbors and us as people again. Less of a dollar sign.
I'm Nikki High, and I own Octavius Bookshelf. We're here today to get resources to people who are impacted by these devastating fires in Altadena. We have formula and diapers and water and masks and food and pillows, blankets, you name it, we have it. My number one goal is to keep my space open from 9 to 6 daily. We are going to take a reset day on Monday, but we're just here to make sure that everybody has what they need. That's my top priority.
Nikki, you're in Altadena. You live in Altadena, right?
Yeah.
What was it like for you personally?
And
your home is safe?
My home, for now, we believe it's safe. I live just north of New York Drive, which got hit pretty hard. And so there are a few houses standing. I was told mine is still standing.
You haven't been home?
No. We can't get in. I took some footage of it on Wednesday, and nearly every home on that block is destroyed. I couldn't get down to see mine, but I'm confident. My block was hit really hard, but again, I heard that there were 5 houses standing and mine was one of them. So I am just, you know, if that's true, I am so grateful. But my primary concern right now is just getting help to my community.
Nikki, tell me about Black Altadena, historic Black Altadena.
Yeah.
Not too many people know this history.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because so many people are unfamiliar with the makeup of Altadena. But Altadena is a town, was a town, that Black Americans can come and purchase homes. At one point, Altadena was about 95% white. Something happened. A lot of families found that it was no longer desirable, and Black families were able to come here to actually purchase homes without the red tape and bureaucracy and straight up
redlining.
That happened. And so because of that, these homes that are lost have been here for generations. People have owned these homes for 50, 60, 70 years. We've grown up in this town. There are so many Black businesses in Altadena. I mean, you know, it's really hard to describe how powerful this community is, though, because you see what happened right now is as devastating as it is. Look at what's happening. I mean, we are coming together and helping to support our community, and I'm just so grateful for that. But Altadena is truly just one of those special places that I don't know that it could be like replicated anywhere else. It's so special because of the Black and brown families that have been here for so long. Literally, you know what, South Pasadena was a sundown town, right? Mm-hmm. And there were so many people who worked in those towns, neighboring towns, Eagle Rock, San Marino, and then they were able to come here and live. And so
Even North Pasadena, in a way, sort of cut the 210 freeway, as is the case in so many cities, that becomes the border.
Yes.
And north of the freeway, you've got the more vulnerable communities living.
Right, absolutely. And it's just, it's heartbreaking, really. I don't know that I've like processed everything at this point because I'm so busy. And I think a part of that is just like a coping mechanism for me. I'm like, how can I help? Like, let's just figure out the immediate needs. And then, you know, I do worry about long-term, if families will stay, if they'll rebuild. And I'm also deeply concerned with the emotional and mental toll this has taken on Altadenians. I'm working with some therapists now to see if I can just set up shop somewhere, maybe to get a therapy circle going or whatever I can to make sure that those needs are addressed as well.
Do you also worry about long-term inequities in rebuilding housing assistance, federal assistance?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I do.
Remember Hurricane Katrina and what happened after?
Yeah. And so often Black and brown communities are forgotten. We get resourced less than other folks, and it takes a longer time. I will say, though, that the city of Pasadena and local organizations have been tremendous in helping. I am so, so proud of the city. But yeah, I am concerned with long-term health impacts as well. Yeah. We don't know. Those old homes had asbestos and lead and so many other, you know, chemicals that are now floating around in the air. Where will these families go? Like, where will we go while it's being rebuilt? How many people, you know, will decide to go to another state or another city, particularly for our elderly and disabled and immunocompromised folks that live in Altadena? I think about the sober living houses that are not here anymore. My heart is with them. I'm really, really worried.
Yeah, there are multi-generational families living here.
Absolutely. I mean, I went to Elliott Middle School in Altadena, looking at the auditorium burned down. St. Mark's School. I remember when I was a young woman, I actually went there and saw Bishop Desmond Tutu speak. Like, you cannot replicate what, you know, we had here. And I just hope so much that we're able to rebuild from it.
And two schools in North Altadena, Oak Knoll, Montessori Red, Rosebud Charter.
Rosebud is such a tremendous partner here at Octavius Bookshelf. They support me, we support them. And to see that school go, it was just an amazing group of teachers and administrators and schools and families who care so deeply about the city and that school. To see it burn down, it's heartbreaking.
We don't know where they're going to go. Where are these kids going to go to school now?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Does the heavy presence of police and National Guard trouble you at all?
I mean, yeah. I'm a middle-aged Black woman in America. Like, it is disarming, absolutely. I grew up in the King's Manor in Pasadena, which, you know, are housing projects that were built back in the 70s, and we've lived there. We lived there, moved in, I think, in the late 70s. And so, there's not a ton of Ah, gosh, I don't. Yeah, trust, and you know, it's something that you grow up with, having this distrust, because the relationship between the police and our communities have always been strained, and there have been multiple examples of not great things happening. Yeah, it is. It's very jarring, right? To see the National Guard, especially. I was just driving up the street and I saw these big tanks, and I just thought, my God, what did we do?
And there's unfortunately some of Altadena's newer, whiter residents have been making a big deal on apps like Nextdoor about looting, and they want the police presence and the National Guard. Yeah. It makes them feel safe, and it's tough for some of the rest of us.
Absolutely. I mean, calling the police on people who look like me and you, frankly, have very, very severe consequences. It's terrifying. But
Nikki, thank you so much. You are an amazing pillar of the community. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who's been helping. I cannot tell you how gigantic my heart is right now. I'm just so in love with my community. And I mean, watching, you know, people get the resources that they need is just keeping me going.
My name is Perry Bennett. I'm originally from Philadelphia. And I am in Perry's Joint in Pasadena, California right now.
And what is this space to you?
Oh, this space is everything, man. I mean, it's Perry's Joint. It's the place where the community meets, where a lot of love happens, you know.
And what do you do here?
I happen to sell sandwiches, some of the greatest sandwiches on the planet.
You're a proprietor.
I am. So I'm the owner of Perry's Joint. My name is Perry. But that's what we do. We support the community, and we just happen to use sandwiches as a reason. But we're really, this is a place of love and support for the community.
Your institution has been one that has attracted a lot of community over the years that it's been open. It's not even that old, right?
Yeah. So I opened here in 2004, but Perry's Joint actually started in 1993 in San Francisco in the Fillmore District. So I was there for 11 years, 93 to 2004, and then I moved here in 2004, and I've been here ever since.
Where is your home, and what is its condition right now?
So my home is on Navarro between Montana and Woodbury.
So North Pasadena.
Only by the grace of God that my home is still intact. And obviously a lot of my neighbors are not as fortunate. So why I still have a home, no man could answer that question.
Did you evacuate or did you stay there?
I did. So 4 o'clock, I believe it was Wednesday morning. I came outside. I got the evacuation notice on my phone. I came outside. I looked across Woodbury and I just saw an inferno. And the wind was blowing like crazy. I literally locked my door. I put my hand on my house and I made peace that was the last time I was going to see my home. And I left. And that was it. I came back. I got my family away. I put my daughter on a plane, my son, and I told my son to take my wife to Corona. And, you know, I was hardhead, and I came back, but I just wanted to do something, but there was nothing I could do. So just only by the grace of God, my home survived.
You could have lost both your home and your business because they're both in North Pasadena.
Yes.
What was going through your head in that moment? Did you take anything with you? Were you able to carry something thinking, at least I've got this family heirloom or this artifact?
I didn't take anything. Matter of fact, at one point, the only thing I really wanted out of the house was a picture of the last time my mom and my dad and myself were together. We took a picture. And really, that was it. That's all I wanted. And then at that point, I realized I don't need anything else. That's all I needed. I did. We lost a property in Altadena that housed a very old business called the Little Red Hen. That was a restaurant that survived, that was part of the Altadena community since like the 60s or 70s, maybe even older.
That was yours?
That was my building. I was just a landlord. But the family that ran the business have been there for decades. And there's so many stories that, you know, people that are native to Altadena can really tell you, which is just so amazing. It's so unfortunate that we lost that business because it was a staple that's been in this community for such a long time.
Can you, you're from Philadelphia, but you're connected to the community here. Can you tell the story of Black Altadena, historic Black Altadena?
Right. And I can only tell you, I've only heard the stories, right? And I can say just by talking to people and being here for the last 20 years and knowing the understanding of this community and the generations. I have a young man, Marcus Springer, who works for me. And he is of the Williams family. And the Williams family, they lost his mother's house, the grandmother's house, the great-grandmother's house. They lost so many houses connected to this. And it's a generational loss. And you have so many of these stories that people have, they grew up here, their parents grew up here, their grandparents grew up here. And it's more than just losing a home, right? A lot of people say, well, you might can build back. You might can build a structure back, but there is absolutely no way you're going to replace the history and the memories of what Altadena was.
Why was Altadena, and why has Altadena been a haven for Black communities?
You know, I think, again, you know, there's people that could probably answer this more than I can, but from what I, since being here and just being, I haven't been, and I've been from the East Coast to down South to spent time in the Bay Area, but there's something very, very special about this haven. Is the mountains is the backdrop, right? And, you know, so you have Pasadena, so you're sandwiched between Pasadena and the beautiful mountains, and then you have this Black community, right, that they all know each other, they have grown up around each other, their history, it's like, this is how I can
explain. And they go to school here. John Muir is right in this neighborhood.
They're like one big giant family, right, a generational family that all lived right here. Everyone knows each other. Everyone grew up with each other. They know each other, or they know their moms, or they know their parents, or they know their grandparents. There's such a connection here, unlike anything I've personally ever witnessed wherever I have lived. And I think that's the thing that was so special about Altadena, and that's the thing that I think is going to be so difficult to keep intact if we're not deliberate in trying to keep that intact.
How do you feel about National Guard right outside your establishment?
I don't really feel great about it. It's I understand why the National Guard shows up in this. You know, there needs to be a different education and different understanding that if you're going to come into a community, right, you need to understand to conduct yourself accordingly. And I think there just needs to be a different education when it comes to National Guard coming into communities like this one. You have to be more conscious. You have to be educated. You have to understand, you know, people aren't what you've learned and seen on TV or heard on the radio. So, and on top of that, we are all traumatized, right? So there needs to be, like I said, a different understanding of how to deal with the people that are traumatized and from this any community. Yeah. So.
What do you hope for the future of Altadena? Perry's Joint is still standing. How do you hope Altadena can rebuild? What would be the ideal scenario for you to see in spite of the fact that some losses just can't be replaced?
Right. You know, well, first for me, obviously, if people can maintain and rebuild their homes. That I'm in business, you know, The hub and the vein of any community is the financial district. Fair Oaks and Lake Street that had our financial vein, the economic vein of that community is Lincoln, decimated. Yeah. Yes, decimated, right? Lincoln, Fair Oaks. Also, we could focus on maintaining and building that especially for this community, to where we could keep some sort of remnants of a stronghold, especially when it comes to African-American entrepreneurs and businesses. That would be really important, because that's always forgot about and left to, because people are so focused on rebuilding the home,
yeah,
right? But you completely forget about the economic power of that community, right. And that's something else that I would like to focus on personally, actually.
Right, because otherwise you have a lot of predatory,
yes,
kind of attempts to buy out, okay, land, and you know already what you and others have achieved here in North Pasadena and Altadena was hard fought to get Black and brown owned businesses, yes, supported, right? Yes. Like that just took years, yes, to build,
yes,
up.
Yes, that's difficult within itself, right? In under any conditions, yeah, under normal conditions. So what's going to happen under conditions like this, right? You're going to be the last ones. You're going to be forgot about. You're going to be pushed aside. And then if they do build new buildings, or when they build new buildings, if you're not in control of it, they're going to make it almost impossible for you to get in. So
keeping those networks strong, mm-hmm, between families is going to be a challenge in the coming, yes, days and weeks.
Yes, it is. It is. But, you know, like I said, these conversations and actually you doing what you're doing and telling the story, right? And people hearing about this, hopefully, even if it just sparks someone else to say, you know what? I agree with that. Let's do something about that.
Yeah.
It means so much.
You've been listening to the diverse voices of Altadena and North Pasadena in Southern California, who've come together to offer mutual aid to their neighbors, friends, and family members in the wake of the devastating Eaton Fire, which has claimed at least 16 lives and destroyed thousands of homes. Broadcasting from a home studio just blocks away from where the fires raged, I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. I want you